Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 645, Catching Up with John Loftus. Due to a computer glitch, this program is being recorded on August 31st of 2008, 2 weeks later. John, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you much, and happy Labor Day to all of us tomorrow.
Yes, indeedy. It is the official end of summer and the beginning of the work season, although for you and for other people, work is always going on. John, what are the many things that is going to be kicked around at the Intelligence Summit? At the end of this side, we'll promote that and some other works of yours as time permits. But the issue of the Iranian nukes, what's your take on that?
Well, I think that the consensus of 38 nations is that Iran has a nuclear weapons program. We're bringing people from each of those intelligence services to Washington for a healthy debate. It's going to be October 22nd and 23rd. Go to intelligencesummit.org for details. But my gut sense, Dave, tells me that Iran has been lying through their teeth. Now, there are dissident groups that have done a wonderful job so far in exposing small corners of the Iranian nuclear development program. But so far, it's always been civilian stuff that's been concealed. There is a strong, consistent trend to suspect that there's a military component to this, but no defector has come forward to confirm it.
John, there's something actually that I would, very rarely do I take issue with you, but in a sense, I would take issue with it. One defector has come forward, not an individual, but China, one of Iran's allies, has actually disclosed to at the United Nations that Iran is working on a nuclear weapons program.
You know, and I wasn't aware of that, to be honest. I thought that China had announced that they had some intelligence, but did not confirm directly that the program existed. Now, here's the thing. China, acting through surrogates in North Korea and Pakistan, is responsible for Iran's nuclear program.
Yeah, that's what I thought was so strange about it. Well, certainly there was a Chinese disclosure, an official Chinese disclosure at the United Nations that implicated Iranian.
Yeah, I think it was designed to direct attention away from China, saying, look, we're coming forward and telling you the truth. And the truth is that there's much more to the story, that Iran, that for years, the Chinese People's Liberation Army has been trading pieces of the Islamic bomb to Arabs in return for access to Arab oil. In a sense, China has betrayed the entire world. Gaddafi turned over all his blueprints for nuclear weapons. They were written in Chinese. That's a clue, duh, you know. China is so greedy for Western oil that it has actually been sharing atomic secrets with rogue states. And that is shameful and unforgivable. And my fear is that someday we're going to lose 100, 200, 300,000 human beings because of Chinese greed.
One of the things that it's very difficult to even talk about the Iranian situation, at least on the left coast, an awful lot of the so-called progressive sector, and certainly I don't want a war, and I don't think many people do, but the progressive sector has been claiming that this is all just so much saber-rattling by the Bush administration. And yet I point out, vis-a-vis the Iranian regime, aside from what they're doing to their own people, they held a Holocaust denial conference in late 2006, at which they were networking with neo-fascists and neo-Nazis from around the world, including David Duke. And as I've said so often on my broadcast, dukes and nukes are a real bad combination.
That doesn't work well for me. But I think that my progressive friends have to realize that if we stand for feminism, there is very few regimes in the world that oppress women more than Ahmadinejad's regime in Iran. Some of my close friends are the leading feminists in the Iranian diaspora, and they are outraged that the left is not coming to their support. They're pretending that there is no persecution of women in Iran, and it is horrendous. A woman can be raped by a mullah in Iran and then sentenced to death for having sex without marriage. It is absolutely obscene. There is no crudity or mistreatment of women that has not taken place in Iran. And the women in America of the left are silent. No one wants a war. I have always told my friends on the right that I don't think that a bombing war would work. It would only unify the population around the mullahs. That maybe a blockade would work to cripple their economic power and hopefully start a revolution to take the mullahs out of, you know, restore democracy. But to pretend that there are human rights in Iran, or that Iran is, the Iranian regime is worth defending, is an insult to all of us that have worked in human rights and civil rights throughout our lives.
I do think, though, we do need to give Ahmadinejad credit. When he appeared before the United Nations, he revealed to the world that there's no homosexuality in Iran, which I thought was quite remarkable.
You know, there is a double standard in the Arab world. I am told there's a wonderful article about homosexuality in Saudi Arabia, that it's actually tolerated, that it's, you know, flatly against everything in Islam, but it is so widespread because, you know, God makes them the way God makes them. But there is a certain amount of hypocrisy in the Arab world.
Oh, yeah, and of course, the Iranians being Shia, there is an Arab minority, but yeah, I was being facetious. There are some people, at least on the left coast, that are dense enough maybe to think I was being playing that one straight, but when Ahmadinejad, I guess that was at Columbia University, where somebody asked him about Iranian persecution of women and homosexuals and or gay people, and he said, there is no such thing. What makes you think there's such a thing as homosexuality in Iran? And I think... although it certainly didn't that does not relate to WMDs, I do think it gives us a clue as to the intellectual moorings of this regime.
Yeah, not since the Third Reich began this crusade against leftist paintings and the cultural. You know, there's not been a time where homosexuals were under more persecution than exists in Iran today. There has not been a time when women under more persecution than exists in Iran today. And my friends on the left are silent, and I gotta say, shame on you, folks.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And again, this regime is openly networking with European and American neo-Nazis and neo-fascists. People like Jürgen Rieger, the aforementioned David Duke, Ahmed Huber of the Bank Al-Taqwa is very close to this regime.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, there was an Arab Nazi movement that existed after World War II that became sort of the progenitor of all the modern terrorist groups. Something called the Muslim Brotherhood. Created the original religious heresies that founded all these extremist movements. They said that the jihad could only be launched by consensus of the ummah, the entire community. And they changed it to say jihad is the duty of every individual. He can make war on his own. And that turned Islam upside down. And it was a very attractive concept to young men that they can say, oh, you know, Islam says... requires me to go out and kill people right away. And it's heresy. It has nothing to do with Islam. I cringe when people use the term Islamofascism. I was a Nazi war crimes prosecutor. And there's Arab fascism. There were Arab Nazi parties. But many of which are now emerging today as groups like Al-Qaeda, PAG, Hamas, and the rest. But it is wrong to say that Islam is responsible. This is an Islamic heresy.
So you think, let me just jump in for a second. I have used in the past the term Islamofascism, not to imply that Islam is fascist, but to distinguish between Muslims, the Muslim population as a whole, and that element of it that is. Also, because the Muslim Brotherhood, although primarily Sunni, does have very strong links, for example, to Ayatollah Khomeini's regime in Iran. Ahmed Huber maintains those. And so the Muslim Brotherhood at least does have a presence in the non-Arab Muslim world, although maybe minimal. I'm sure that's something you know more about than I do.
I think that maybe I'm being too PC here, but I think it's okay to say that there are Islamic heretics who are so extreme that they have revived the Arab fascist movement that existed there before World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But not all, you know, to call Islam fascist is, I think, wrong.
It's, oh, absolutely.
85% of the world's Muslims are not even Arabs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of the 15% that are Arabs, you know, maybe 1%. Are what people would describe as Islamofascists. They are heretics to Islam, but because they have a lot of oil money, they get away with it. You know,
John, a couple of lawsuits. One that you filed in I forgot when you filed. Maybe back in the 90s. It bore fruit in the early part of this decade, and one that's working on now. First against Samuel Arian, and now against CAIR. I'd like to have you review for us once again how the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist or Arabic fascist organization has basically been able to sort of steal the mantle of Islam or the public relations mantle of Islam in this country. And the relationship of Grover Norquist and Karl Rove and the Islamic Institute to these kinds of elements.
You know, people, it sounds like a conspiracy theory, but there was an Arab Nazi movement called the Muslim Brotherhood, or Ikhwan. And the Ikhwan has survived over the years. It's still very vibrant. It is the parent organization of every Sunni-based terrorist groups, which is to say probably 90% of the terrorist groups. And the Muslim Brotherhood has at various times worked for the Russians, worked for the British, worked for the Americans, worked for the Arabs, and it's a pretty corrupt organization. I think that the Muslim Brotherhood in America was attractive to GOP manipulators because they said, hey, we can use the Arab vote in America to offset the Jewish vote for Democrats. And so Sami Al-Aryan, one of the senior leaders of a sub-terrorist group called PIJ, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, said, I can deliver Florida for Bush. And he did it in the first campaign. It was the Arab vote that Al-Aryan drummed up that maybe elected Bush president. So guys like Grover Norquist, these ultra-right-wing activists, said, hey, this works for us. Let's revive the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, I'm bipartisan. There was the great neocon, Ken Timmerman, wrote a book in which he once praised me in saying the pugnacious John Loftus, who attacks both Democrats and Republicans equally. Hey, the truth isn't left or right. The truth is what it is. It belongs to the people. And let's find out.
CAIR, that is an organization that has quite successfully represented itself as a Muslim civil rights organization and a moderate organization. You have filed a lawsuit against that.
I filed a lawsuit because I was trying to get some funding for it, but another person had a lawsuit before me.
Oh, okay.
CARE is the propaganda arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, like second-generation Nazis, if you will. Okay, this is as extreme a group as the Nazis are, but they have a better propaganda front. They have convinced gullible newspapers all across America that they're a moderate group. It's absolutely untrue. They're extremists. They're heretics to Islam. The FBI even hired the Muslim Brotherhood to do training sessions. And, you know, the rank and file and the middle managers at FBI are going, oh, my God, what is this craziness? We know who these people are. They're the fronts for a terrorist group. In fact, the Justice Department named the Muslim Brotherhood as a co-conspirator in a criminal case just a few months ago.
And we should not lose sight of the fact that people like Grover Norquist and Karl Rove have basically been their champions in the political arena in this country.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair to add another name to that list. I think that John Negroponte, who is now the Deputy Secretary of State for Intelligence, falls in that category. I was, I have this intelligence summit where we have exposed a number of things, including, the Western protection of the Muslim Brotherhood. And there is a sad and shoddy relationship between the U.S. State Department and these Arab fascists, the Arab Nazi movement. We're not talking about neo-Nazis. We're talking about the sons of genuine Arab Nazis from World War II. For example, people don't realize that Saddam Hussein was raised by his uncle, who was one of the leaders of the Arab Nazi revolt in Iraq during the war. That all across the Arab world, there was this whole subculture of the Muslim Brotherhood that was devoted to Arab fascism, against democracy, against Western culture, and against Jews and Christians.
One of the interesting, the co-founder of Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute was Jamal Barzinji, and he was a business partner of Youssef Nader, who was a Nazi spy in World War II.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's old stuff to intelligence professionals, but it's new and shocking to your listeners, and quite honestly, to many members of the modern intelligence community. They had no idea that after World War II, the Arab Nazis were never prosecuted as war criminals. They were recruited by Kim Philby and eventually sold to the ever-gullible Alan Dulles of the CIA. Now, Kim Philby, of course, was the highest-ranking communist mole inside the British Secret Service, and he had agents all through the Muslim Brotherhood. And so this was one of the ways that he used to penetrate Western intelligence. And did it very brilliantly. But till this day, the State Department refuses to realize that they've been conned. They want to put these guys back on the payroll.
One of the things you wrote about in this, in both Blara's Secret, but even more in The Secret War Against the Jews, is the Fascist Freedom Fighters program. Grover Norquist, when he launched the impetus for the Islamic Institute, saw the Muslim Brotherhood as a counterweight to traditional Jewish support for the Democratic Party. Do you see the Norquist, Rove, Talat Otman, Islamic Institute nexus as an extension, perhaps, of the Fascist Freedom Fighters program, which evolved into basically a Nazi branch of the GOP under their ethnic group?
Yes, I think it's not an exaggeration to say that the GOP, particularly the Nixon administration, tolerated the recruitment of Arab Nazis just as they tolerated the recruitment of ethnic Nazis. It's not just supposition. When I was researching my book, The Secret War Against the Jews, we found classified files in Australia where our State Department admitted they knew where the Nazis were living in America. It was important to get out the ethnic vote in five key states. Mm-hmm. Horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, but we should also note, too, I did a lecture series a couple of years ago, John, called The First Refuge of a Scoundrel. If patriotism, as Dr. Johnson said, is the last refuge of a scoundrel, often religion is the first. And I think people who may be shocked by what you're saying, and particularly partisans of the so-called progressive sector, should also remember your book on Holy Trinity, in which you documented how the Vatican basically was able to ally elements of the Roman Catholic Church with these same types of elements.
Very sad. I expose, wrongdoing on both sides of the spectrum, and the Vatican had an extreme record of helping move out Nazi money and Nazi war criminals and funding anti-communist assassination campaigns and military campaigns. It was a dirty world. So I just try and tell the truth and let the chips fall where they may. It's not McCain who's the enemy. He's actually a fairly decent guy. He'd probably make a semi-competent president. It's not McCain that's the enemy. It's indifference. And most Americans are, quite frankly, indifferent to the damage that we have done in the world. I was a former Army officer, but I really believe that we wasted 3 years and 3,000 lives in Iraq. And we did it because for the first time in history, we did not put the U.S. military in control of an occupied country. We put our State Department in control, and they were just incompetent. It's not about left or right. It's about moving forward, admitting what really happened, trying to fix it, move on.
Would you say, John, that perhaps, let me introduce another thought, that perhaps, and I want to get into some of these phony atrocities in the Middle East, such as the Al-Dura case, which was recently the focal point of litigation, but perhaps even, my feeling about Iraq is even beyond the State Department. What was in the executive authority there were certain corporations, really more than anything having to do with the government per se.
Yeah, I think that history will say that Vice President Cheney makes Vice President Spiro Agnew look like a Boy Scout. There's so much commercial penetration of our political system, that it's the multinational corporations that are controlling our foreign policy. And it's dangerous because multinational oil corporations don't care about America. They care about profit. They're perfectly willing to destroy the American economy, to crush our national interests, to put a few bucks in their pocket. So we've got to regulate the last group of pirates in the world, and those are the multinational corporations.
Well, they're doing a good job, and hopefully there'll be people who'll be willing to take up that challenge. Jonathan, as the Second Intifada got underway at the beginning of this decade, there was a case, the Al-Dura case, in which a young Palestinian boy was supposedly shot to death by the IDF. A recent French court ruling in litigation has determined that that was a phony incident. I wonder if you'd describe that more for us and also use that as a jumping-off point for discussion of some of the other phony Israeli atrocities that hit the media, such as the ones during the 2006 Lebanon War.
French television staged a hoax. They had a kid and his dad crouched in a corner, and the kid pretended to be dead. They did several takes. The outtakes was in accord, so the kid opening his eyes, moving up off the stretcher, and going back for take two. It was a fraud. It was a fraud, however, that did enormous damage in the Arab Street. They really thought that the Israelis are killing little children. And that today is still the consensus. My friends on the left say, oh, the Israelis are killing Palestinian children. They didn't. It was a hoax. Another hoax, for example, was the death of Rachel Lurie. She was guarding not a family's home. The home actually wasn't even touched for another 18 months. She was guarding the well. The well was actually the entrance to an underground tunnel through which weapons were being moved.
Rachel was actually
kneeling down in front of the tractor. The driver of the tractor couldn't see her. She was too low, and he accidentally killed her. But her friends issued a phony tape showing Rachel standing up. If you look at that tape, you'll see very clearly that Rachel's shadow is pointing to the right and the tractor's shadow is pointing to the left. It is an altered photograph. There is no way that Israeli tank driver could have seen Rachel Curry if she was kneeling down in front of him.
By the way, she was over there under the auspices of an organization called the International Solidarity Movement, which is an actual functional arm of the PLO. It's not a peace organization at all.
No. They're a semi-violent organization. I have seen photographs of ISM members waving AK-47s and chanting their support for the Palestinian uprising.
But very quickly, John, there was a hilarious to people like me, maybe. There was an incident up in San Francisco where there was a demonstration on behalf of the Palestinians, and an organization calling themselves Lesbians for Palestine was participating in the organization. But the leaders of the march basically kicked them out. They said, we appreciate your support, but you're not going to be allowed to march here, which is sort of emblematic in a way.
You know, it really is. There's a lot of hypocrisy going on here. The sad thing is that the Israeli government just is terrible at public relations. They simply do not get the version of the truth out. A disaster takes place. The Arabs say it's an atrocity by Jews. The Israeli response is to send a forensic team and to gather the evidence that it really was a hoax. But by the time they've gathered the evidence, 3 months later, no one listens. The news has moved on.
Tell us about the Lebanon War of 2006. That was a striking example of that.
Oh, yeah. This was sick. You had, Hezbollah armored weapons groups stationed right next to civilian buildings. This is a violation of the law of land warfare. It is a war crime. And the Israelis took out one of the tanks, and in terms of those secondary donations, they brought down a building in which some 13 people were killed. But to the Hezbollah, it's okay to sacrifice their women and children as bait for a combat operation, because it makes such a wonderful play in the West. And I got to tell you, Dave, I think this kind of stuff, these atrocities against women, are going to keep continuing until my progressive and liberal friends say, enough. We're not falling for this propaganda anymore.
Well, it's been pretty effective, and at least some of the incidents. I was struck by the ambulance. Supposedly, an Israeli helicopter gunship attacked an ambulance and destroyed it. And there's this giant hole straight down through the top of the ambulance, as though a 16-inch round from a World War II-era battleship had gone through it. And it quite obviously was not the case. The angle of entry, and there would have been nothing but a big crater in the ground if that had happened. And just aside from Hezbollah stationing weapon systems in civilian areas to draw fire, and that's a war crime in and of itself, a lot of those incidents just didn't happen. They were embellished with corpses from mortuaries and other things.
Oh, yeah. But again, we didn't have enough forensic scientists on hand to expose to the press that they were being conned. And I think, the press, by and large, except for the French press, acts with good intent. They want to be objective, accurate, and fair. But I think what's happening now is the standards of journalism that existed when I was a kid are being watered down. Objectivity, accuracy, fairness, it's almost gone. What's happened, I think, is that the left has become polarized, which is exactly what Grover Norquist wanted.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been quite successful. There's been almost, inertia, too. Once a media outlet has gone for a particular version of a story, recanting does not come easily to any of them, right, center, or left. And the Al-Dura incident, where that kid was supposedly killed, has now been ruled in court to have been phony, and yet Daniel Pearl was beheaded in the name of Muhammad Al-Dura, and a lot of other damage has occurred. And
Where's the apologies to America and to Israel for allowing Al-Dura's name to become a symbol for the Israeli oppression of children. It's just horrible.
It is. John, we're down to our last few minutes here. There are a number of irons that you have in the professional fire. Tell us about, the Intelligence Summit, and also the Witness Tree, and you have a documentary that's going to be, you've been involved with a documentary that's going to be emerging at the Sundance Festival.
All right. Everybody listening is invited to one of the best parties in the world. It's called IntelligenceSummit.org. October 22nd and 23rd, Senator Obama has already agreed to speak. We're trying to get Osama to speak on the next night. We have senior politicians from Israel, intelligence leaders from around the world.
John, I think you met McCain has agreed, and you're going to try to get Obama, right?
Yep.
Yep. So McCain has said yes, and Obama hopefully will be there.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm a Democrat and an open Obama supporter, and I think it's important that Americans get to understand the nuances of some of these foreign policies. Our intelligence summit is scheduled for the week after the last debate and the week before the elections. And we hope that this becomes a time when both candidates for president really enunciate their policies on what to do about Iran. Because quite frankly, the GOP has just left the whole nation rudderless for the last, 10 months. No decisions are being made. Condoleezza Rice is sort of running foreign policy. But that's not something that she should be doing. She's a lovely person at building consensus. She is not efficient at understanding the nuances of Middle Eastern terrorism and the links with government agencies.
She was a director of Chevron at one point, too. John, tell us about The Witness Tree.
Great little book. It's about the Dulles brothers. Of course, everyone knows one was Secretary of State under Eisenhower, the other head of CIA. But back in the 30s, their youngest sister was married to a Jew. And this outrage for the brothers was, Eleanor was married to someone other than a WASP, and her husband committed suicide under very mysterious circumstances. That was when Eleanor discovered that her two brothers were Hitler's bankers. They were moving money out of Wall Street into the Third Reich to have secret control of monopolies and cartels.
This is John and Alan, John Foster and Alan Dulles. Go ahead, John.
And so Eleanor Dulles became the whistleblower. She ended up getting the blackmail information on her brother's clients that enabled the Jews to get the extra votes in the United Nations to create the State of Israel. It's a true story. The dialogue is fictional, of course, but the facts are true. You're going to have to go to Amazon.ca because it's not out in America yet. That's Amazon.ca. The title is The Witness Tree, and it really shows how the Bush family started off and where the dirty money came from.
We got 40 seconds left in the interview. John, tell us about American Secrets.
I'm working on this documentary with a friend of mine about American corporations that sell America out. And these are right-wing Republican corporations that betray us. And it goes back to the 1930s when American corporations funded Hitler. It goes back to when the American oil companies funded a radical extremist group to overthrow the government of Mecca and Medina and to establish the Saudis as the new power in the Middle East. I think what we need to learn is that a lot of history isn't about conspiracy. It's just, sharks swimming in parallel directions. Most of the stuff that's happened, the really bad stuff, was 90% stupidity, 10% conspiracy. But where the 10% conspiracy exists, and it's almost always about making money, then it can be very, very dangerous.
And those sharks leave a lot of blood in the water. John, we are all out of time. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 645, catching up with John Loftus. This is being recorded on August 31st of the year 2008. For John Loftus, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.